coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
Spring is finally here in New York City, and that means many things, one of which is Tribeca Film Festival is in full swing. We've attended. We're going to share some of our highlights with you.
And then we're discussing new TV premieres this week. First, Westworld on HBO, and then My House on Viceland. And I got an exclusive interview with the executive producer of the new series that chronicles the lives of the members of New York City's queer ballroom scene.
Wonder how you nailed that interview. All of that, and of course, the big sell. It's all happening right now on Inside Pop.
Hey, y'all. I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson, and this is Inside Pop. We are, of course, your weekly dive inside the world of popular culture. And we've got some great stuff to talk about this week. We're going to start off with the highly anticipated season 2 premiere of HBO's Westworld, a show that I'm going to say kind of hate-watched for much of its first season. But then I found myself back in front of my TV on Sunday night watching the season 2 premiere.
Sean, for those people who listen and don't understand the term hate-watched, please define that.
You're watching a TV show even though you don't purely enjoy the TV show. And so what you do is you enjoy disliking the show. Hate watch. So so for me, season 1 of Westworld, and I know I'm probably in the minority, I'm used to that, but I felt like it was, I don't know how many episodes, 10 episodes, felt like 20, but it was 10 episodes of there's a mystery and there are puzzles and we're repeating a lot of actions and loops and things are slowly, slowly happening. And then boom, at the end of season 1, a big twisty surprise reveal. And so for me, it felt like all of season 1 was about it's kind of like the worst of Lost. It was all about, oh, there's a mystery. There's a mystery. Oh, boom, look, there's a big old surprise. And so it felt like season 1 was all about exposition to get to the twist. And I found that very frustrating as a viewer. What did you think of season 1, Westworld?
You know, I think I got caught up in the first few episodes of just the world that we got dropped into and, you know, these robots, I guess we should call them. It seems very basic to call them robots because they're very complex. And you know, kind of like the lab that they all work in to create these robots and the fantasy that people pay to attend that is Westworld. You know, that concept I thought was really, you know, creative and unique and interesting and different and, you know, goes into the psyche of all of these people. But I agree with you. It's taking its time. And, you know, I was just like, okay, let's get to this mystery. And then I feel like there was a couple mysteries. And honestly, I knew that this premiere was coming up. And I was like, I don't remember this big twist. I forget the end. I remember not really being as engaged in that last episode. And I feel like I didn't enjoy the last episode.
Right. So why
I'm like,
am I...
I'm not sure if I'm going to watch this because I'm just like, I don't even remember. So am I going to tune in?
So I decided to come back because a couple of reasons. There is something that HBO does, I'll say, better than Netflix, better than any other channel, which is create event television. And, you know, the money that they spend on Westworld is obvious, and the production value, and it feels like an event, right? And you know, and it is a popular show. So there's something that I miss about I miss the viewing experience of seeing something like Game of Thrones, which sadly is not on this summer. And I feel like maybe Westworld is scratching that itch a little bit, a big, amazing production value, big story. And so I'm giving it another chance because the re- But the reviews I've read have been pretty good. They've actually said okay. that season two is going to be a little bit less about cloak and daggers and more about character. And so I'm all in for that. So I decided to sit down and watch and think about maybe that this is also a good future segment for us, Amita. Maybe the shows that we have given second chances and those second chances paid off. I don't have any examples right now. Maybe Westworld will be an example, but think about that if you have an example. And I'll just say that I sat down, watched season two, episode one of Westworld, and there is a lot of the same. What's going on? Is Bernard talking to her in the present or the past? But at the same time, Jeffrey Wright, his performance is really amazing and just now has an extra layer because he has some knowledge this season that he didn't have last season. And so to see that actor tackling that aspect of the character is amazing. And yeah, so it's interesting, actually, not just Jeffrey Wright, but it's interesting to see all of the characters tackling this additional layer of knowledge that they, that we know that they have and they know that they have this season. So I'm going to say it's off to a good start. It doesn't feel like a completely different show. It is the same show, but I do feel like they are diving into character, and it feels more linear, right? There's not repeated action. And yeah, so I'll say I'm here for Jeffrey Wright. I'm here for Maeve Thandi Newton. I'm here for Tessa Thompson, who has like awakened into my world as so many things. She's so many people to me now. And I'm here for Leonardo Nam, who did not appear in the first episode. So I'm really worried about Felix, the nerdy employee who helped Maeve escape. I did not see him in the first episode. That does not bode well for his character's survival. I'm going to keep hope alive, though, for a little Felix, who is my favorite character in the show.
All right, maybe I will give it a chance, knowing that a little bit more of the details of kind of this beginning of the second season. So that's good to know. I think I need like a refresher.
Oh, you know what? I'll post in our show notes because the New York Times did a really good refresher to remind you of what. So I'll share that with you and our listeners. It's a pretty good short. Here's what you need to know. Here are all the characters in play. So that's it was a perfect Westworld 101. So I'll share that with you.
Awesome. Thank you, New York Times. And thank you for putting that in the show notes. That might just get me back into it.
Right. Well, shall we move on to some film pop culture news that we have to share?
As we've done the last couple years, and as we are privileged, again, we secured press passes to the Tribeca Film Festival this year. And it's an incredible film festival that's not even just film anymore. There's all these really cool, different sub-sections of the festival now. There's stuff with TV. There's these really amazing talks. And there's like this really awesome new like VR section of content that they're putting on at Tribeca this year. And we get a chance to watch a lot of stuff when we can. And Sean and I got a chance to watch a couple of documentaries that were really interesting, and we wanted to share them with you guys. I got to see this documentary called Howard. It's a documentary about an really popular lyricist, musician that you may not have completely known by name, but you know him by music. Legendary lyricist Howard Ashman. He is part of the pair of Howard Ashman and Alan Menken, and they were behind Little Shop of Horrors and The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast. They were, and Aladdin, like they were this team that created all of this iconic music for Disney films and some other films and plays and things. So it was a really wonderful look at Howard Ashman in, unfortunately, the last few months of, last year, I believe, of his life. But it also chronicled just kind of his upbringing and his craft and his talent. It was a beautiful, beautiful documentary, and what a tribute to his talent. It was really, really, really wonderful. There's this really great scene in there of Alan Menken and Howard Ashman in this incredible, I don't know, like 50-piece orchestra recording Be Our Guest with Angela Lansbury and Jerry Orbach. It was amazing to be in that room and to kind of see all that come together. What a beautiful tribute to him.
That sounds great. I definitely want to check that out. We've talked about a number of music documentaries on the show in the past. The Amy Winehouse documentary, 20 Feet from Stardom. Is that what it's called? The great documentary about backup singers. When you were describing this one, it made me think of the George Michael documentary, which is, I think the difference is the George Michael documentary is about a singer. He didn't realize that it was the last few months of his life. In the case of this documentary, did he know that he was passing away?
Yeah, no, they really, unfortunately, it was unfortunately very sad. He died of AIDS-related complications at the age of 40. And he actually didn't get to see Beauty and the Beast hit the theaters.
Oh, wow.
Which just seems so... It just hurts your heart. But he knew. And it was an interesting, difficult thing to see that he was so frail. And he was trying so hard to still continue to work, but there was moments where he couldn't.
Wow.
So yeah, it's like I said, it's a beautiful tribute. It's unfortunate, you know, cause it was a period of time where AIDS was in the forefront. And he was an unfortunate victim of that.
Well, it's definitely, I mean, documentaries do so many wonderful things. And to pay tribute to this man sounds amazing. And then also to remind people and to shed a light on the ravage of that disease of AIDS and HIV. And you know, it still exists. It's still around. So I think it's good to both honor the man, but then also shine a little bit of light on what that disease has done. And it's taken away every person that this disease has killed is special. And I think for this podcast that talks about pop culture, you could actually just list so many singers and actors and musicians and composers who have been killed by this disease. So that's going to be, thank you for that. That's going to be high on my list. And then also what I want to be high on everyone else's list is a documentary Amita and I got to see together called Beyond the Notes, which is a documentary about the Blue Note Jazz label. And I would just say that for those who don't know about Blue Note, forgive me if you do, I'm not condescending, but for those of you who don't know about Blue Note, it's this incredible jazz label. And if you saw just one of the album covers from Blue Note, you would know immediately what we're talking about, because they are known just to have the most beautiful album covers. It was almost always a photograph of the main musician on the cover with this great kind of color cast of, like, you know, a color cast of blue or yellow. So these great close-ups and very stylized, very 50s, 60s style, which I'm a sucker for. So, and listen, you learn a lot about the label. One of the things that I learned was that the person who took all of those great photographs was one of the owners of the company, who just spent all of his time in the recording studio photographing and dealing with all these amazing musicians who came through the label.
Yeah, that was so interesting to learn. I think this was such a really iconic music label, and I am not as familiar with jazz as you are, but I definitely, you know, enjoy this genre of music, and I do know some of the players in classic jazz, and I think it was a really great education, and it went through the years of this small record company that became an iconic, you know, name in jazz. And it really was great to really take the journey of all these amazing musicians like Miles Davis and Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter, and then keep going throughout the years and even talking about jazz's influence on hip hop. And, you know, Ali Shaheed Muhammad from Tribe Called Quest was in there, and, you know, he was talking about the influence of jazz on hip hop and rap. And it was so great to really just see how Blue Note and all of the legendary artists that were on this record label for decades have an imprint in music.
My big takeaway from this documentary was the fact that it only takes one or two people to really change the lives of millions. And in this case, the Blue Note Jazz label was started by two men, refugees from Europe, who had a passion for music. And their passion and their ambition, and it wasn't an ambition to make money, it was just an ambition to have a label and share great music and give artists like Thelonious Monk, for example, who might have been too experimental to be signed to any other label and then be supported for years. They wanted a foundation and a place for that type of musician. And yeah, so that documentary really did kind of, I think it's a really good reminder that if you have some type of passion and love and skill at doing something, go for it, because the outcome, the result can be phenomenal, like this record label. So I found it really inspiring. I found it inspiring to hear young artists like Norah Jones featured, older artists like Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter, and, you know, just hearing people who are masters at something, a master vocalist like Norah Jones, master musician like Herbie Hancock, just talking about something that they know so much about, and then talking beyond that, right? Like, you hear them talk about music, but then you just also hear them talk about life and race and interpersonal relationships. So that's, yeah. So I'm going to say I will also say, Amita, that this is something that people should try to see in a theater, if it is released in a theater, because just hearing that jazz music played on great speakers is a treat. So listen, if you have a good home theater situation, do that as well. But, or just put on some good headphones if you're watching on your iPhone. But it's really kind of visually, but especially aurally impressive.
I think this is a really well crafted documentary that I think if there are any music, you know, classes, music composition classes, or anything in any college, like, this is something they should show. It's an education.
Yeah.
You know, and a necessary one, you know.
Agreed. So. Agreed. And it's entertaining. It's not just school, right? It's entertaining. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. So, Amita and I may try to see at least one or two more films. The struggle is real. It's hard because there's so many great films and we've got access, but we also have bills to pay and we have day jobs. So I'm not sure how often this last week of Tribeca, how many other films we'll get to see, but we're going to try. Well, coming up, we'll hear why I may not be seeing any more films at the Tribeca Festival. The answer when we return.
In a world dominated by dude bro movie podcasts. A world where Casey Affleck has an Oscar and Angela Bassett does not. Only one podcast is brave enough to call bullshit. Who Shot Ya? With Ricky Carmona.
A lot of people don't know Porgs, Puerto Rican.
Alonzo Duralde.
I would eat Oakjaw.
April Wolf.
I want to interrupt and say that the fish man was real sexy.
Drea Clark.
I have a real soft spot for King Kong.
And women of color.
I was like, damn!
Ryan Coogler got final cut.
Coogler got final cut?
I just felt like the film was so sour and so completely irrelevant to basically anything in life.
Who Shot Ya? Listen every Friday Friday on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
I am so excited to interview my co-host, Sean, today because he has been giving all of his energy to this new series on Viceland. It's called My House, and it follows the lives of these incredibly talented young performers in the New York City queer ballroom scene. Sean, I'm so excited for you. I'm so excited for this series. I cannot wait to see it. And I'd love to get a little bit of background on, first, just the New York City queer ballroom scene. If people do not know what that is, would you like to educate us on that?
Sure. Thanks for making a little bit of space in the show for this project. It feels like a passion project. And let me just do this twice. First time. It premieres on Viceland on the same day that we release this podcast, Wednesday, April 25th at 10:30 p.m. And if you don't have Viceland or if you miss the premiere, you can also see the first episode for free on Viceland.com. And it's a half hour, so 22 minutes without commercials. And I hope that people get hooked because ballroom is an amazing, amazing culture. And it's something that I think a lot of people know about because of a movie called Paris is Burning, which came out decades ago I think it was 91 Paris is Burning came out, but it chronicled the late 80s Vogue ballroom scene. And essentially what this is it started in New York City, gay and trans, Black and Latino people who vogued. And voguing has changed over the years. So in Paris is Burning, it's really about poses, and it's about kind of taking that world of high fashion magazines and high fashion design and in some ways mocking it, in some ways paying homage to it, in some ways claiming it and twisting it so that it becomes a point of aspiration for people. So everyone, so if you're in ballroom, you're part of a house. So there's House of Mugler, House of LaBeija, House of Ninja, and Balenciaga, Mizrahi. And so it's about also family, right? It's about a time when gay people, many of whom were in poverty, and people of color who are gay, you know, didn't have familial support, and the ballroom community became their support. And the thing a lot of people don't know is it's still alive. Ballroom is still alive and bigger than ever. And Madonna's Vogue video is just kind of a blip in the memories of everyone in ballroom. And it's really just about this vibrant community that still exists.
Thank you for that background. Wonderful to know a little bit more about the history of ballroom. So I would love to start to ask you about the origins of this series, My House, premiering April 25th on Viceland.
Right, on Viceland. On Viceland. In this series, we follow six people who are part of the ballroom community. And they're all six very different people. One of the things that they have in common is that they're all in ballroom. And we basically follow their lives over the course of about, let's say, 3 months. And so it's about preparing for these Vogue competitions, which are amazing. They're called balls. But it's also about their personal lives. So we really do kind of take a deep dive into the culture of ballroom. But what I hope happens is that everyone's kind of amazed and in awe of how beautiful these and crazy and colorful these balls are. But then hopefully I hope they start to care about the characters as well, because these are amazing people and they open up their lives. They talk about a lot of personal things and share a lot of special, vulnerable things in their lives. And so I think what happens is you kind of show up for the balls, and you stay because you care about what happens to them after they leave the ball.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for it, and that really encapsulates what I felt. They are incredible performers. They're I wish I could dance like they can. Like all of these, their moves, they're extremely flexible. I'm so impressed. And it's this beautiful, it's graceful, it's hard, it's so energizing to see a ball, to see them, you know, really give everything they have to this performance. And I'm really, really excited to see and learn more about all the characters and all of the performers in this series. I have to say, I feel like Ballroom is having a moment, even though it has been in the scene for a very, very long time. There was a documentary that we both had seen last year called Kiki, mm-hmm. that also chronicled some of the houses and the members of the ballroom scene. And FX is going to bring the series called Pose by Ryan Murphy, which is a drama series about the life and society of the ball culture. And I'm really excited that all of this is converging right now. And I feel like people are going to have such an interest in your show to see the real story and then be able to see Pose in June and see a little bit more dramatized, depiction of ballroom as well. It's really exciting. It's really, yeah. really exciting, feature a piece of culture that people may not know. How do you feel about being part of that?
Well, it feels like that year that both Armageddon and Deep Impact both came out. And I feel like...
I said a piece of culture that people
right.
may not
sorry.
Know.
Oh, right. Sorry. Yes, yes.
Okay. Not the end of the world.
But it feels like that to me. No. It was completely not planned at all. The fact that Viceland decided to greenlight this series about ballroom, and that Ryan Murphy probably... a couple of years earlier, because it takes longer for a scripted thing to get together, decided to do it, and they're both coming out the same summer, is just a huge coincidence. But, you know, you could also say, okay, there's something in the ether. There's something about the fact that ballroom is becoming more popular and more known. You know, part of it is, for example, one of the cast members, and I will say that it's strange, we can talk about this as producers, calling people cast, because they're people, and they're not acting. And that's, I think, one of the things that I'm really proud about the show. I think early on, we were trying to figure out, so what is the show? Is it a reality show? No. Let's not call it a reality show, and let's not try to follow reality show tropes. But let's also not be kind of a navel-gazing, sensitive, precious documentary, right? Let's maybe make some type of hybrid. And so one rule I asked everyone to follow, both the cast and the crew, let's never ask the cast to pretend that the cameras aren't there, right? Because that just feels kind of false to me, right? Like, because when you ask them to pretend something, then they're pretending and they're acting. So there are moments during the show where they'll acknowledge the camera. There are moments in the show where you might hear the field producer's voice, and that's usually my amazing field producer, Neka Onura, who really just kind of bonded with the cast and built their trust. And so, yeah, so we all kind of committed to let's not pretend, let's do something that's not quite a documentary, not quite a reality show. So, you know, I would say that, I was going to say one of the cast members in the show toured with Rihanna a couple of years ago. And so I think anyone who went to Rihanna's show saw voguing. And so, yeah, I think like so many things in culture, there's an ebb and flow and there's an increase popularity. And, you know, with that also comes the danger of, so does this culture get appropriated, right? So all of a sudden, you know, yeah. and it kind of answers a question, what happens to that backup dancer who gets to Vogue with Rihanna on tour? What happens to him when that tour is over? You know, he's still in ballroom, but then what is he doing next? And that's one of the things that Alex opened up his life about, and he allows us to go with him to his day job. And I think people are going to be really surprised when they see the so fashionable, so fabulous Alex Miyake Mugler and what he does 9 to 5. And he does it with pride and he owns it. And he explains, okay, I do this so that I can do this. And this is what I want for my future. So it's pretty The entire cast and the whole team that worked on it are all amazing people to me. And I'm just excited for everyone to give it a try and to check it out. I think people are going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I love it. I love how you just described that. You know, you're going to see a little bit more of their lives during the day and what they do in order to be able to perform at night and practice and give their blood, sweat, and tears mm-hmm. to their art. I love seeing artistry being kind of broken down and seeing behind the scenes of all that stuff. So I'm really, really excited for this, not just because my esteemed co-host is the executive producer of this, but also because, like I said, I'm seeing a piece of culture that may have been quote unquote underground for a while. Being able to put a spotlight on that is always really interesting to me. So if you didn't hear us the first couple times, tune in Wednesday, April 25th, Viceland. Find it. It's there. You know where it is. You're going to find it. You're going to watch this channel and you're going to watch the series. It is called My House.
Thank you so much, Amita. I'll put the link to the first episode in our show notes so people can easily check it out. One-stop shopping. So thanks for indulging me. We've said this before. We tend not to talk about our day jobs, just, I guess, not to sound narcissistic, but I'm really passionate about this. So thank you thanks for chatting with me about it. It was fun.
Thank you for sparing your precious time to join me on this podcast for this interview, Sean.
So precious. So precious. Okay. Well, coming up after the short break, we're not going to talk about me at all, except for how I felt about the big sell from last week. So we'll have my review of Amita's big sell after the short message.
Hey, you with the headphones. Just between you and me, the Max Fun store just got some of that sweet, sweet new merch in stock. You know, that merch from your favorite Max Fun shows? Could be posters, tote bags, shirts, stickers, patches, aprons. We got it all. Well, we got a lot. Point is, there's some new stuff. Go to maxfunstore.com.
Welcome back to Inside Pop. Now it is time for the big sell. Sean, how would you describe the big sell?
How would I describe the big sell? Well, in some ways, imagine if you spent 3 months working on a TV show, producing it, and you were really proud and happy of that TV show. And then you go up to someone and say, hey, do you want to watch this follow documentary about the lives of members of the queer ballroom scene in New York City? And then someone says, sure, I'll check it out. Never heard of that before. And then they return and tell you what they think of it. One final plug. For My House. But the big sell is also about recommending something from the world of pop culture to the other and then sharing our feelings about it the following week.
What a wonderful concept that is. Last week, novel. Last week, I sold Sean a Tiny Desk concert from NPR. Of a group called Rye, who did this candlelit performance on a typically not candlelit Tiny Desk concert. What did you think of Rye, Sean?
Well, let me perform a public service first of all. That's Rye, R-H-Y-E, because I did go online. And I was like, where is this damn Tiny Desk concert? I can't find it. R-H-Y-E. So, number one.
Yes. Okay, fine.
And sure. Number two, I say Genki desu ka, Amita, because first of all, let's just proceed with this. I'm giving automatically just a baseline of 2 stars because I had forgotten about Tiny Desk concerts, and it really is one of the best little jewels on the internet for music lovers. Such a wide variety of performers pop in at the NPR studios and perform acoustically. And I forgot how much I love it. And I was just, when I was searching for Rye, I discovered so many other people who I like. Like there's this drummer who I think drummed with Jose James. That's how I know him. Yes. Mm-hmm. He's amazing. He's such a good drummer. He was on there. I need to go back and listen to him. Dee Dee Bridgewater, who is an amazing singer. Y'all better check out Dee Dee Bridgewater if you don't know her.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so you automatically get 2 stars. We're starting with 2 stars. Now,
amazing.
Rye, yeah. Now, Rye was great. That was my dramatic pause. It was great. I was looking for another word besides great. But I really enjoyed Rye. I loved their moody, candlelit deal situation. And it wasn't just for show. I mean, that music is the type of music where you light some candles and you chill out. Pour yourself a glass of rye or a glass of wine. R-Y-E. But no, it was very, I think you described it as soul music, and I didn't hear that at first, but soulful, but I know what you were saying. It's definitely mm-hmm. kind of atmospheric, and I think a lot of the songs from what I could hear are about romance and love, tender love, and...
Yeah.
So I think that I got into what you were saying about it being soulful. But yeah, I really enjoyed Rye a lot. I loved the Tiny Desk concert, and I would like to do an interesting experiment for myself and just go back and listen to them without the visual of the cool Tiny Desk space and see how I feel about the music in and of itself.
Oh, I love that experiment. Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed them. I just, you know, like I said, I went on there. I go on there, you know, every couple months just to see, because it's a great way to find new artists, like you said, and to just kind of discover them in a different way. And it just, when you go on their page, you just can't not click on the Rye video because it looks so different because of the candlelight. And that's honestly how I found them and how I really enjoyed this performance and started to dive a little bit more into their music, which, you know, they had an album that came out a couple months ago, and I've been listening to them on Spotify, and I don't know. It's one of those things where it's real easy, it's really smooth, and you need candlelight, maybe a bubble bath, I don't know, some wine.
I did listen to them, and I said, in a very good way, this is so Amita, because it did remind me of some other big sells you've sold to me, like... And not exactly like, but The Suffers, Sleeping at Last.
Kind of,
And, you know, I didn't love Sleeping. I like these guys so much more than Sleeping at Last. Also, Sleeping at Last keeps popping up in my release radar, and I need to stop that somehow. But let's keep it positive. Let's keep it positive. seriously, really enjoyed it. So I'm going to give it Rye on Tiny Desk 3.25 stars.
I love it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that lovely rating. What do you have to sell me this week, Sean David Johnson?
Well, I do have a little experiment for you. It's a little project. And I know you have a busy week coming up, so don't fear. This isn't a time-consuming project. This is something you can do on your commute to work in the depths of the New York City subways.
Thank you.
This woman's crossing rivers to get to work these days, people. So... yeah, you are.
I am.
If we weren't recording this episode early in the morning, I would sing a beautiful a cappella version of Many Rivers to Cross. But you guys, sorry, you don't get it this week. I'm sorry. Anyway, we here at Inside Pop, and you listeners know how I feel about Prince. I kind of like him. He's okay. He's my favorite musician of all time. So listen, I wish he released. It was the 2-year anniversary of his death, and I think in honor and tribute of that, Paisley Park released a live version of Nothing Compares to You, which is, I would say, one of his most popular songs. And it is, I think it's basically a live kind of rehearsal version that he and the Revolution performed, and it was recorded, and it's never been released before. So it was Prince front and center singing this song. I'm pretty sure you've already heard this, but this is only part of my big sell. Have you heard the song?
Okay. I have. I've heard a snippet of it, so I haven't seen the entire thing, so it's okay.
Okay, so this is the little project, and I would love it, listeners, if all of you joined in. I think this could be really fun. This harkens back to a conversation that we had about covers a few months ago, which was a really fun conversation. I'd love to have that again. I mean, I think there are more covers to talk about. So people on Twitter who follow, who love Prince, kind of lost their minds. Oh my God, this is so good. This is so amazing. This is so different than the Sinead version or the live version with Rosie Gaines that we know. And my thought, and I tweeted it out, it's like, but people, the original version of Nothing Compares to You was by this amazing group called The Family. And Prince wrote it for The Family. And one of the singers in The Family, it was Wendy's twin sister. Her name is Susanna. And she shared vocals with St. Paul Peterson. And they sing the song as a duet. And the version now that people are loving is very, very, very similar to The Family version. So basically, as a kind of fun point of discussion and project and big sell, Amita, I would like to big sell you the experience of, over the course of the next week, can you listen to three different versions of Nothing Compares to You? Don't do it all in a row. Also, I'm not the boss of you. Do it how you want to. But can you listen to...
You love to be the boss of me.
Can you listen to Sinead O'Connor's cover? Can you listen to the original version by The Family? I can get that to you. And can you listen to the newest version released, which is Prince's live version with The Revolution? And then I'd just love to hear...
In that order?
Let's go chronologically.
Okay.
In terms of release. So The Family first, then Sinead O'Connor, and then this latest release. That order.
Okay.
And I'll help you people out in the show notes with links so you get to hear all three of those. And then, Amita, if you could be kind enough to return next week to the podcast. I know that's something that's you're considering, but if you could come back next week.
I don't know.
If you could come back next week.
I need a lot of bribery. And some baked goods.
All right. So, everyone, if we're lucky enough for Amita to return next week, maybe she'll talk to us about, you know, what she feels about all three versions. And we could, I don't know, like get into a little mini cover song discussion.
Thank you. I'm excited to listen to all those in that chronological order and really see the variations of the song. So thank you for that. Big sell. Prince themed. R.I.P. The purple one. You're the best.
And that is it for this week. But the party doesn't end, because you can stay in touch with us on Twitter and on Instagram. We've got an easy and fun handle, @PopInsiders. Get it? And you can also visit our Facebook page. Search for us on Facebook, Inside Pop. And, of course, our official website, InsidePopPodcast.com. That gives you access to everything I just mentioned, old episodes, a chance to subscribe via iTunes or Stitcher or any of the major podcast platforms. It all kind of leads, all roads lead to InsidePopPodcast.com.
You can also find us on MaximumFun.org. If you don't want to use any of those forms, go to MaximumFun.org. Definitely check out all of the other podcasts on Maximum Fun. They're really great. They're funny. They're full of culture. They are really, really fantastic podcasts. We are so humbled and honored to be on this podcast network. So head over there as well.
And then I want everyone to take deep cleansing breaths. Do some stretches. Because next week, it is figuratively off the hook, literally off the chain. Not really literally. Next week's episode is going to blow your face off. Talk to us, Amita. What's happening next week?
Oh, next week, I'm going to call it like one of the best weeks for pop culture
under pressure
of 2018, and it's only April 1st. Because we can't stop talking about her. Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer is released. The emotion picture, the album, we have obviously need to discuss every second and frame of it. And then Handmaid's Tale, Emmy winning Handmaid's Tale returns on Hulu. That's going to be intense and amazing. Can't wait for that. And Sean, what is the film that everybody will be talking about next weekend?
It's all been leading up to this. Black Panther 2, starring Chadwick Boseman and Letitia Wright. Listen to me. If you watch these commercials for Avengers of Infinity Wars, it really does. They're trying to make you. Okay, listen, people. They're trying to trick
you. Smart marketing.
Bamboozle you. It is not Black Panther 2, but it is Avengers Infinity Wars. All 97 of your favorite Marvel superheroes will converge to this one film. I hope it's 8 hours long. And it's all been leading up to this. If you haven't heard Marvel say that, it's all been leading up to this. So we're going to talk about that. We've got TV, music, and movies next week. Amita and I have been training all of our lives for a weekend for an episode like this. We hope we are up to it. I know we are. No, we're excited to talk about all this pop culture with you. So please prepare, enjoy it with us. And it's going down.
I'm overwhelmed just thinking about it, Sean. And I'm so busy that I don't even know how I'm going to be able to consume all this.
Oh, yeah, me
but
either.
I can't not.
I have no idea. Okay, I have other, like,
but we're going to do it for you. Let's just give you a basic calendar. Wednesday, watch My House on Viceland. Thursday, watch Handmaid's Tale. Friday, watch a motion picture, Dirty Computer, and listen to the Janelle Monáe album. And Saturday, go see Avengers. Come back here next Wednesday, listen to us discuss all of it, and try to keep it tight in less than an hour, because that's a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, and then your lives are complete. All right. Thank you so much for putting up with all of our giddy excitement, and we'll see you next week. Take care.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.